For the first time since the start of free agency, we hear from both the GM and the head coach. Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Danny Surak joins me. 8 days ago, free agency officially began, and the Cardinals did not waste any time. In fact, the team has continued to stay busy. To date, a total of 9 new signings plus 1 trade. How do the pieces all fit? Well, we got a little insight, stress the word little, earlier on Wednesday. It's Cardinals Cover 2, episode 737, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, one heart, one threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcasts.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic!
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealoux.
So before we get into what Monty Austin-Fortz and Jonathan Gannon had to say, I want to say, and let's hope Paul Calvisi isn't listening, though he really should be, I have in my hand, Bird Gang, thanks to Danny, one of the highly coveted, sought-after Paul bingo cards. And for the first time, Danny, I played earlier on Wednesday, and I got to say, I'm in good position after just one episode of Cardinals Underground.
I mean, you never know what Paul's going to say, so doesn't really surprise me.
Now, I do have a question. And again, you can follow along on all our Cardinals podcasts, azcardinals.com/podcast. The discussion about UFOs,
doesn't count for aliens? He didn't say aliens.
Okay. I had to get a clarification because if that was one from this week's episode, then I'm one square away from bingo.
I think I need to make the cards bigger instead of 3x3.
3x3?
Because Paul says a lot of things.
He did. I got Isaiah.
Maybe next time.
Casa Calvisi.
Mm-hmm.
Calvisi dog.
Yeah, the new dog that his family rescued. Yeah, Cardinals Underground.
All right.
You never know what you're going to hear.
Very entertaining. And the fact that the two of you are in on it, and Paul is now aware of it, but doesn't play it, and you two are sitting there.
I can't give him a card. I haven't made a bingo card in months. Something I did last year after talking about it for a while. Brought it back.
Well, I appreciate it. I feel fortunate to be included.
You should. Not many people outside of Darren and myself and then Cody and Omo on the other side of the glass get one.
It's good. Pretty confident in what's going to happen later on this offseason. All right. As I mentioned, Monty and JG speaking to the media for the first time since the scouting combine, first time this free agency period ahead of the draft. I do think we'll hear from them again right before the draft, maybe a week or two ahead of time, but specifically about the free agency and the approach to free agency this year versus last year. At the scouting combine, Monty used the words strike, aggressive. And then you followed up in your sit down asking him exactly what that looked like. And he identified and went further into it and says, okay, it's more about the preparation. Does the player fit? And then what's the market for that player? Because we did see this team be aggressive on day one of free agency. And we also saw them spend some money that was not spent a year ago. But as Monty and JG both mentioned on Wednesday, much different position that they are in their jobs and knowing what the Cardinals want to do moving forward, that they are taking a different approach and not hitting the ground running or on a treadmill, as Monty mentioned, that this offseason timeline is still there, but they're more comfortable in what the timeline is and how they've gone about things.
Right. They're not playing catch up. I mean, this time last year, Gannon had been the head coach for maybe a month. I mean, awesome for 2 months. So that's obviously going to make things a lot easier now, is having that time, the schedule that Awesome Fort likes to have for his staff, for the coaching staff, and Gannon as well on that front, and making sure that everybody is on the same page. They were prepared early for free agency and talks about draft prospects, what they're looking for in terms of a player and a person. Now, after seeing this first wave of free agency and then thinking back to Awesome Fort using the word aggressive and how he was going to approach this part of the offseason, something I didn't think about before that I notice now are the contracts and the lengths. And last offseason, which made sense of Awesome Fort coming in, trying to get his footing of what was on the roster, what was he going to need to do short term to reach those long term goals. We saw a lot of 1 year deals, handful of two. This time around, there is a lot more 3 year deals, a few one and some 2 year deals, but 3 year deals that we did not see last year. Now that they have an understanding and a foundation for this roster, they have the cap space, and you're not so much in maybe what could be seen as kind of a scramble, let's figure out what we have year one. You're truly in that transition phase now of, let's have a little bit of consistency now that we know what we have in our coaching staff, what we want in players, what we have in the players already here. Give out some longer deals that they can afford and have some consistency moving forward.
Five players received three-year contracts. Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, Sean Murphy Bunting, Mac Wilson, and DJ Dallas. To your point, there were zero players either re-signed or signed in the offseason that received three-year contracts a year ago. There's also a lot more guaranteed money being handed out. Kaiser White was the single highest player as far as guaranteed money a year ago at $6 million. Four different players already this offseason, or I should say five players, have already exceeded that amount, and four of them in double digits as far as guaranteed money is concerned. And why people focus on guaranteed money is, well, that's the money that you get your first year or at signing, but it does show you how a team thinks of you and your role on that team. You're not giving Justin Nichols almost $20 million guaranteed to be a backup or only get 25 to 35 snaps a game. He's going to start, and he is going to play 40, 45, 50 snaps on that defensive line, still be a part of that rotation, but he's going to have a major role on this team.
I mean, it's a business. If you want players to come sign here in free agency when they are likely having other offers, you got to get them to sign here, and that's all in the money. Now, you have to find the sweet spot of where the player and their agent are happy with the number, and you feel happy as a team and an organization of what you're getting from that player, right? How are you going to utilize them? How much are you paying them? There's obviously a fine line there, but I mean, when it comes to guarantee money, I mean, that's you got to get the players to want to sign here. And as much as culture and staff and competitiveness and all of those things play a role, money's what talks.
Jonah Williams got $19 million guaranteed on a two-year deal. Now the question is, which side of the line of scrimmage? Left tackle?
Don't ask the
question. Or right tackle?
I tried.
I asked the question to you. You went further and asked the question to the head coach.
And the general manager.
And the general manager. And we only got... we'll see. We've got response from both. All right. Monty actually did give you an answer saying it was, quote, a good problem to have. And then JG stepped in and basically shut down all questions about that and maybe all questions about any player about position.
Well, let me clarify, because I know well enough after a year with Monty Austinfort as a general manager or a head coach, Jonathan Gannon, in their respect, to ask straight up of, which side is this player going to play? I know they're not going to tell me that. Which coach or GM would? Very few. I phrased my question to Austinfort as, when you are signing a versatile offensive lineman, i.e. Jonah Williams, is that already in the discussion throughout that process of knowing which side you're going to want him on and which side you're going to want Paris Johnson Jr. on, two players with versatility on the left and the right side to bookend the offensive line, or is that something that comes later? So that was my question. I wasn't straight up asking which side, because that would be silly on my end, knowing they weren't going to answer.
But it is a fair question.
It is a fair question. Austinfort didn't really give me a straight answer about how much of that comes in discussion with the process of signing Williams, but did talk about the versatility and how it's a good problem to have, and pretty much that they're not going to know until they see both, well, the whole offensive line, really. It's not just Paris and Jonah Williams, but until you see them both out on the grass, which to a certain extent I can understand. Now, I don't believe that they don't have an idea of where they want Williams when
Bingo.
You sign him. Williams spent most of his career as the left tackle, and the Bengals brought in someone else last year. At first it was reported he didn't want to play on the right side, ended up sticking out that year playing as the right tackle starting in Cincinnati last year. I find it hard to believe that you sign an offensive lineman that has that versatility and you already have another versatile offensive lineman on your roster. You have an empty hole at left tackle after releasing DJ Humphreys. I believe that that discussion has already been had, even if it's not with Williams and his team, at least internally within the Cardinals organization. Gannon did step up and pretty much say, hey, I just want to get ahead of this. Don't ask me who is starting where, because I'm not going to know until the Friday before our regular season opener, and that's when I'll let you know. Again, do I buy that? No. Do I buy that's when he's going to tell the media? Yes. And even then, I don't even think he's going to tell the media. I think it's going to be, you're going to have to wait and see Sunday and see how we line up for the first time. That was my long way around of saying, we don't know which side Jonah Williams or Paris Johnson Jr. are going to play on the offensive line, but I tried.
And I applaud you for that. We will get an idea because...
training camp.
I think even before that. Now, I'll go back to...
You think like one-on-ones and OTAs and stuff?
I'll go back a year ago and Paris Johnson Jr., what do you do with him? Is he a left tackle supplanting DJ Humphreys and you're moving Humphreys to right side, or do you put Johnson at right tackle? A lot of discussion. Well, rookie minicamp, what happened? Well, there were two offensive linemen that were drafted a year ago, John Gaines, Paris Johnson, and they worked a lot together. Well, I noticed, where was Paris Johnson lined up next to John Gaines? Wasn't left of him, it was to the right of him. And that stayed the entire offseason when you only had a handful of linemen and you weren't going five across. Paris Johnson Jr. was always to the right of whoever was playing center. Now, was there a large enough gap between the center and where Johnson was for that guard position? Hard to tell from our vantage point out on that football field. But you'll get an idea this offseason when they start lining up. Even though it's not 11-on-11 or 7-on-7, but pay attention to where players within their position group, especially on the line of scrimmage, are lining up. Especially if you have a center out on that football field, well, where's the guard lined up? Which side? And Paris was always to the left of John Gaines.
It'll be a little later since neither of them are rookies and
true.
Getting that. I think it'll be interesting, which we don't have to go in full discussion about, but... kind of a residual move possibly is if you want to move Paris from the right to the left side, do you move Will Hernandez from your right guard to your left guard? He has experience there. He has experience next to Paris. And if that's something the two of them feel comfortable with and confident about, I don't think you really have a true starting left guard at the moment. You've got some depth. I mean, the Cardinals just signed a center in Evan Brown, who was most recently with Seattle as a center. He has experience as a right guard. I don't know if that signing specifically is to bring in competition for Yael DeFroholt as your starting center. We don't know yet what this staff likes out of John Gaines because he didn't have an opportunity past the preseason, suffering a season-ending knee injury. So there's questions there, but I'm wondering if there's going to be a trickle-down effect of if Paris moves from the right to the left side, maybe he's not the only one making a side change.
Typically, offensive line coaches, if you're going to move pieces, the less pieces you can move, the better, because then it just kind of throws your entire continuity out the window. But it is an interesting conversation or something to discuss, pay attention to, because you do have, in addition to Brown, but you have Elijah Wilkinson, who was brought back, Tristan Colon, who was brought back. Don't forget, Dennis Daly is still under contract on a two-year deal, the second of a two-year deal. A number of different routes this team can go.
All before the draft.
Yeah, and then depending on what happens at pick number 4 or 27 or 35, are you adding another body in that room? And it's all on Clayton Adams and the rest of the coaching staff to figure out where these pieces fit. What works better on the left side or the right side? I'll say this, though. Evan Brown signing officially on Wednesday told azcardinals.com something that we have heard repeatedly from these new players. We talk about the price of admission. Jonathan Gannon's favorite phrase, price of admission. Do you have the passion for the game? And will you put team first? And Evan Brown telling azcardinals.com, I believe it was Darren Urban who got it, quote, I am willing to contribute to the team in any way they see fit for me and help them win, end quote. Heard the same thing from Jonah Williams. I know what I'm bringing to this team, and it's great tackle play. when asked if he had a preference, left tackle or right tackle. Heard that from Sean Murphy Bunting. I prefer to play on the outside, but I'm looking forward to just being a piece that they can use and utilize in every way and really help me reach my ceiling, end quote.
I take all that kind of with a grain of salt, because kind of like what else is the player going to say, right? Like, as opposed to like, hey, I'm going to come in and wherever they need me, like, I'm like, of course, right? Like,
but if they were, but if you'd have that discussion as far as, okay, we want to sign you, and you have that discussion, well, they brought me in to play outside corner. Now, which side of the outside corner? Or they brought me in to play slot corner. If I'm sitting on that podium, I got no, doesn't hurt me to say what I was told.
Yeah,
open up that door a little bit.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine Jonah Williams coming and saying, I only want to play on the left. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? I personally take all those. That's great to hear. That's what you want to hear. You want to have a team first mentality. I just personally kind of take all those specific things when somebody is signing and they don't know where they're going to end up or anything yet. I personally kind of take all those with a grain of salt, because what else are you going to say?
Beats the alternative.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's not like many players are coming and saying, I only want to play in this role, on this spot, in this position.
You had a chance to sit down with six of the free agents on a week ago Thursday? Hearing them and then hearing their press conferences on Wednesday, I got a different feeling because I was gone last week from afar, just reading these names and seeing some quotes on a piece of paper. It read differently than when I listened to it and watched it on the Arizona Cardinals official YouTube channel, that there is a passion to play this game. And I did get a sense that these players were genuine in wanting the team to win. Yes, money matters maybe most of all, but bottom line is, put me in a position that has me succeed, and then has us as a team succeed as well.
And for the most part, with the exception of likely, really like running back DJ Dallas, most of these free agents, the situation, whether or not they knew it before signing or not, is a lot of them are coming in to be a starter. And having the competition of where this roster stands right now, you get the feeling you are a starter, and that's what you're competing is to keep that job as a veteran. It was very interesting to hear from every single free agent, that's not an exaggeration, talking about how something special is brewing here in Arizona, in the culture, the competitiveness, that team first mentality that people have picked up around the league, whether that's watching film or talking to other players or playing against the Cardinals. And that's something that they see from Jonathan Gannon, which, yes, is a big hand in that. But even further up comes from Monty Austenfort. And that was the big buzzword when they were both hired roughly a year ago, was culture and not having an ego, that team first mentality. And the way we had talked about all last year of seeing that in the character of the rookies, you can continue to see that character in the free agents that are being brought on. That was something Austenfort talked about at the podium Wednesday, was all of these signings are very intentional and not just one-dimensionally, but multifaceted, and why they are intentional and the players you are bringing in. These free agents are veterans. They are veterans who have starting experience, who are durable, who have lasted not just one season, some of them two, three, or four seasons of playing every single game. That's not something the Cardinals had last year, especially on defense, in the linebackers room, in the defensive line room. And when you're looking at the signings of Bilal Nichols, Justin Jones, the linebacker Mack Wilson Sr., that's what stands out. That's something Austenfort talked about. Yes, that was something we looked at with these free agents, was durability. Are you available on game days?
Might not be big names, household names, but the reason they were brought in, these players, specific reason. You use the word intentional. Why were you brought in? Are you durable? Bottom line is, first and foremost, can you play? And then, are you able to play? Meaning, are you available on Sunday? All nine of these new additions on free agents have played a year ago at least 14 games. And most started all 17 games. Evan Brown's played 16 of the 17. The one game he did miss was the first meeting against the Cardinals in Seattle. But yeah, that matters, because you don't want guys who aren't going to be around, yet their tape looks great, but it's only an 8-game, 12-game sample size. Now, the exception to this is LJ Collier. And the question that you asked, what did you see in him, even though it was less than one full game? But obviously enough was seen in the offseason, training camp, preseason games, where, all right, bad luck, tear your bicep. All right, rehab, we want you to return. Carlos Watkins was in the same boat. He hasn't been brought back yet. Maybe he will be. But there was a reason why Collier was signed on the Friday before the new league year began. The intention, we want LJ Collier back in the room. We believe in him, even though he got hurt in week one.
Gannon said the vision we have for Collier is a good one and talked about the passion and the violence he has when it comes to stopping the run and rushing the quarterback. I think you did see good things from Collier throughout training camp and the preseason and that first game out in Washington and getting his hand up there and deflecting a couple passes. And you got a short but good glimpse of what he could possibly bring as a former first-round draft pick back to the Seahawks. I think it does say a lot, whether that's more so to LJ Collier or more so to Carlos Watkins. At this point, you're right. I mean, free agency, we've got months ahead of that for us. But it is a good sign that you want to bring back Collier and you don't want him to truly test the market and end up elsewhere, and that you can see him likely from where you were to look at the roster right now as a starter, likely with LJ Collier, Bilal Nichols, and Justin Jones.
And on defense, especially that D-line, you need depth. And you also need depth at the quarterback position. And this was another question that I had going in to the offseason before the start of free agency. What were you going to do? Hopefully you don't need a backup quarterback. Hopefully Kyler Murray plays all 17 games and it doesn't matter who's behind him. But we saw a year ago, 66 different starting quarterbacks. Danny, that's two a team with at least two different starting quarterbacks on average. And the question was, all right, well, what are you going to do? Are you comfortable with Clayton Tune after just the one start in Cleveland? Obviously, they're not. And specifically, when Monty Ossenfort was asked about the acquisition of Desmond Ridder, it was Monty who brought up the experience and the 17 starts that Ridder has. Yeah, only 2 years in the league, and this will be Tune's second year in the league. But the starting experience matters, maybe for a half, maybe for one game, maybe for a handful of games, but you need a backup plan. And I'm more comfortable now than I was 2 weeks ago as far as that plan behind Kyler Murray. Again, you hope to never see your number two quarterback, but you better have a plan B if something should happen.
Agreed. I think when you look at a good backup quarterback, I mean, not to sound harsh, but there's a reason they're backup quarterback. So it's important to not get, well, yes, it is important to look at the tape and the experience that Desmond Ridder had in Atlanta. I wouldn't get too caught up on the fact of, oh, but he lost his starting role. But the thing is you're not bringing him in to compete against Kyler Murray. You're bringing him in to, in worst case scenario, hopefully only use in a small handful of situations. And then if you have to, you could reassess from there. I like the trade, sending wide receiver Rondale Moore to Atlanta to get Ridder in return. This staff very clearly likes big receivers. They had too many small ones. I don't think there was a good scenario in which you had both Greg Dortch and Rondale Moore out on the field with similar skill sets. They liked what they saw in Dortch because they tendered him to sign in the future and return this season. I think it was hard with this staff and with the previous staff of finding the best way to use Rondale Moore. It seemed like the best way was to use him out of the backfield and maybe on a few deep shots, but that wasn't consistent enough. So I like the fact that, okay, if you're seeing as a Cardinal staff, you're probably not going to get a lot of use out of Rondale Moore. Maybe there was a chance he wouldn't have even made the roster come the start of the regular season. You looked at that trade value and you took advantage of it. I would have liked to have seen Hollywood Brown return, who signed a one-year deal with the Chiefs. And we don't know if the Cardinals were given out their own offer or trying to counter whatever Kansas City ended up giving him, I can't sit here and say that I would blame Hollywood of if you have the opportunity to go play with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in Patrick Mahomes, who has proven that he can win with very little receiver help and you can go out there and be that guy for him. I can't sit here and say that I would blame Hollywood if even if he wanted to come back to Arizona. So wish him the best. I still like the trade, though, of getting a backup quarterback who you trust, because from what we saw in Cleveland last year with Clayton Toon, even if he took monumental strides this offseason heading into year two, I feel a lot more comfortable immediately with Desmond Ridder as the backup than I would with Clayton Toon.
Especially if you want to stay in that playoff chase December, January, and for whatever reason you don't have Kyler on the football field. You bring up the wide receiver position and specifically Hollywood. Put yourself in his position. Cardinals projected, mocked to draft one of these generational talents at the wide receiver position. You have Michael Wilson, you have Trey McBride. Despite the fact that Kyler and Hollywood are good friends, there's a better opportunity in Kansas City. Quarterback aside, yeah, you got Travis Kelce, but really, who else do you have as far as a major weapon pass catcher? I think this is great for Hollywood, and I wish him well too. Would have loved to have seen him here, but I just don't think – I think Monty has a type when it comes to wide receiver. And these three, whether it's Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, they're all
bigger,
big receivers, 6 foot plus, 200 pounds. And they get open, they catch the ball. Do they block in the run game? That's something I think the Cardinals coaches really need to figure out, because that's valuable in this offense, because I do think it's a run-first offense. The wide receivers need to complement the run game. We still don't have an answer as far as where this team is looking at when it comes to the draft, because, as Monty said, wide receivers come in different shapes and sizes. They come from big schools and small schools, and that was basically the extent when he was asked to not evaluate, but discuss the depth and the talent in this wide receiver class. And it's not a surprise that he went that direction. I was hoping for a little bit more about each of those three wide
receivers.
There's
no way he would ever name drop any prospect.
Discuss the three different wide receivers?
No way.
Not to compare and contrast, but just what he likes and what he
doesn't
like. No way I
could
ever
see him doing that.
I could see him talking up all three.
Mm-mm.
No?
No, I think that comes off from what we've gathered of how little we get of.
Because everything he would have said would have been.
These are our top receivers. These are the three I'm going to mention. I'm not going to mention the others. This is where they are projected to be drafted. So these are the teams that I am discussing a possible trade with. Yeah, I don't think we would ever get him to name drop. I will say, based on being at the Combine in Indianapolis and talking with a good handful of draft analysts, it's similar to what we've heard of. It's pretty much pick your poison. Do you prefer A, B, and C, or X, Y, and Z in a receiver? A lot of those things could probably overlap. It's just your preference of what you are wanting from the projected top three receivers.
Now, a lot of questions about the draft on Wednesday, because Marvin Harrison Jr. did not, I don't know if he attended, but he did not participate in Ohio State's Pro Day on Wednesday, skipping the workouts much like he did at the Scouting Combine. Big deal, not a big deal. Monty was asked about it, said it's the player's personal choice, something he echoed back in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine when Marvin and a handful of other players did not participate. Certainly, selfishly, you'd like to see it, but at the end of the day, if you're that top-tier talent, top-five pick, top-ten pick, a pro day is not going to help you any. It can only hurt you. Plus, it's not football. You're playing catch. Can you play football? What does the tape say? And I don't think you needed to see, if you're the Cardinals, Marvin Harrison Jr. out on that football field on Wednesday.
Harrison did do interviews at the Combine. I believe he did medicals as well, because we can't say that about every prospect of quarterback Caleb Williams, who is participating in his pro day out at USC. It's interesting what this will do to the future of draft prospects, of players that are going to be generational talents or players who think they are and aren't, and just kind of how this is going to change the landscape. It's been a couple years of players, those top players, not participating in combine drills because they are not as contained as or controllable as a pro day is, where really a quarterback is throwing to receivers that he knows, he trusts, he has practiced those routes with, the timing and all of that down. So you look better at your pro day, not just with Marvin Harrison Jr., but even Caleb Williams. I mean, not doing medicals and only doing medicals with the teams that you're going to visit. And in my opinion, like wasting precious time because you're having to do medicals at every single team. And the fact that if it doesn't work out and you're looking for another contract and another team outside of whichever team you're going on these draft visits, pre-draft visits to, you know, talking 3-4 years down the road, now these other teams don't have whatever your medicals were. That's my side rant that I should get off. I just think it will be interesting how the landscape changes because it clearly is moving forward of these players putting more of a priority of training for football rather than training for drills, training for combine drills, training for pro days, and doing all of that.
I don't mind skipping the workouts because you're not playing football. You're training for drills that you're never going to run, and I don't care your 40 time when you're not in full uniform and cleats and someone's in your way.
There's so much technology, too, to where when you're out at practice or you're training or whatever it is, the teams can track your speed, and they can do all of that as well.
Now, for those that might want to skip some of the medical or some of the interviews, I think it's a handful, maybe only 2 or 3 prospects a year, if that. I mean, you have to be the elite of the elite. But where it might cost these players, if they are elite coming out of college, well, if it doesn't work out, and all of a sudden, after 1, 2, 3 years, you're looking for a job. Now, all of a sudden, you've hurt yourself because you didn't do the medicals, the interviews 3 years earlier at the scouting combine because you thought, I don't need to worry about team number 12. I got no shot of ever playing for them. Baker Mayfield's a perfect example. Number 1 overall pick didn't quite work out in Cleveland. Well, I'm sure the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had all their notes from his scouting combine work, interviews and medicals. Sometimes it's the second or third team, especially for a quarterback. I guarantee you, Danny, not all these top 3 quarterbacks, these 4, 5, 6 quarterbacks that everyone projects to go in the first round, not all are going to hit.
Look at all the 2021 quarterbacks. Yes. Trevor Lawrence is the last one standing in his original team. Justin Fields, another great example.
Lamar Jackson was the last quarterback selected in his draft class in the first round. And he's a 2-time MVP. So there's no guarantee, but you have to trust in those that are making the decision. And do you trust Monty Austin Ford and company based off of 1 offseason, 1 draft? I do. Now we just have to wait and see.
Wait and see also if the Cardinals end up picking at 4. I know the phones have started ringing a little bit. Won't really pick up until pro days are finished and draft boards are more finalized and you get a little bit further in free agency and you can kind of figure out, okay, Austin Ford had said maybe a week leading up to the draft or when those talks really start to get serious, but his phone's ringing. And if I'm a GM for another team and I saw what Monty Austin Ford did year 1 with the Cardinals, 3 months on the job, I am calling him every week for a checkup, seeing how he's doing, what's going on with his family, how golf is, how his boards. I want to be in his ear. I want to constantly be a name that, if Austin Ford wants to go crazy again in a good way and work his magic, I want to be one of the teams he wants to call.
And these phone calls right now, it's all prep. It's nothing going, I don't think anything's going to materialize if the Cardinals do trade out at number 4. It's not happening before the Cardinals are on the clock with that 4th overall pick. But it is going to get louder as far as those conversations. I think that's all it is right now. It's conversations. Hey, if this happens, then this. Plan A, B, C, D. Because even though you're picking number 4 right now, you still don't know what might happen ahead of you. You think you know, but are the Patriots really going to take a quarterback? What quarterback? If they don't take the quarterback you think, is there a team that's going to jump up to number 4 because that quarterback that everyone assumed was going to be available or not available is now available.
Or if one of these scenarios where Minnesota, who desperately needs a quarterback at 11, if there's a thought that the Vikings can make a trade up with the Cardinals to 4, is there another team so desperate that they would be willing to make a trade with the Patriots and New England drops down a couple spots? I mean, there's a lot of scenarios. I agree. I mean, there's no way you make a trade before the draft and before you see how 1, 2, and 3 shakes out if you're Arizona. I will say, I do have a problem, not that you asked. I try to do a mock draft simulator. I talked about this on Cardinals Underground. I try to do a mock draft simulator after seeing Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft 3.0, where the Cardinals did trade down to 11 with the Vikings, and they got pick number 23. So Arizona ended up with 3 first-round picks. On my mock draft simulator, I try to do the exact same trade. I wasn't trying to go crazy. Giving up 4, getting 11 and 23. And Minnesota kept rejecting my trade, and I was not happy about it.
Don't want to see Danny mad. I'll say this, though. I don't know why the Vikings weren't happy with it. It should have been you as a general manager not happy that you were getting enough.
Maybe I should have been asking for more, and that's why it kept getting rejected.
Because I loved that mock. Daniel Jeremiah's 3.0. What you're getting in a edge rusher, a wide receiver, and a defensive tackle. Now, what it's going to take for the Cardinals to go from 4 to 11 has to be more than just 11 and 23.
Especially for a franchise quarterback.
Yes. As they say, there's a quarterback tax when it comes to draft trades.
I said this to Paul and Darren. After seeing that mock draft, one of my first thoughts was, if this happens in real life, the chaos that the following day, Friday, will be when all of these draft picks come and we do all of this content and all of these shows will be mayhem. And that was one of my first thoughts as a team employee.
Selfishly, because, you know, yes. That sometimes you have to be a little selfish. And if not all three of those first round draft picks are in Detroit, then Cardinals have got to go pick them up. And that could delay the start of things on Friday. And remember, Friday, the draft starts at 4 p.m.
We are going to have things before 4 p.m. for Cardinals fans to tune into.
A lot of time between now and the draft, although I think it's 35 days before the first round begins.
Thursday, I believe it's April 25th.
Yes.
25th.
So good math done here.
Well, that's not so much math. That's just looking ahead at a calendar, but thank you.
One final thought from what Monty and JG had to say on Wednesday. And I do think you got a peek behind the scenes when the question was asked about DJ Humphreys. And Monty's tone changed. And I do think he was very genuine in saying, quote, it was brutal. And acknowledging how difficult it was to release DJ, who would be on this roster if not for tearing his ACL late in the season. I fully believe that. I just think, based off of the injury, when is he going to be available, if he's going to be available, the cap hit that you have for a player who might not even be on the football field, all of that played against Humphreys being released, though Monty did open the door for Humphreys to come back at some point down the road. It's not like the door is closed, and it really shouldn't be, because everyone loves DJ Humphreys, the player, but more so DJ Humphreys, the person.
It is really unfortunate, the timing of the injury and kind of forcing the Cardinals' hands. I think it's an interesting topic because there was already going to be so much discussion around it of if now was going to be the time to draft a left tackle when you're looking at how deep this draft class is and the capital and the position that the Cardinals are in, or if you want, if now's the time to move Paris Johnson Jr. from the right to the left. I mean, that was a discussion when Paris was drafted a year ago, was he has a lot of experience on the left side. Is that what the plan is, to be DJ Humphreys' replacement down the line? There's just so many options, and it's, I mean, we've talked about this. It's unfortunate on a personal standpoint that this is the business side of things coming out of Humphreys played well. Is he a first ballot Hall of Fame left tackle? No, no one's saying that, but he has played well and he has been consistent as the blindside protector on this offensive line for many, many years. He has been a leader in the locker room. He was great with the media. And I don't just mean his incredible sound bites, which there are plenty. when things were difficult, whether that is how the team was performing, off-field problems going on around the team or with the coaches, as the media, you could count on DJ to talk with you and to be honest with you. So I can absolutely believe that it was a brutal decision by Monty Ossenfort to have to release Hump and move forward in whatever decision that's going to be, if that is with Jonah Williams or with Paris or a draft pick. It'll be interesting what the future holds. Depending on his rehab, I don't know that DJ comes back next year, because you're going to have depth. You're going to have players that are going to be more experienced in terms of practice reps and being out here. But maybe next offseason, I mean, who knows what will come of that. What was interesting was the follow-up question of if it's a similar situation for defensive lineman Jonathan Ledbetter, who also suffered a very late season ACL injury. And Ossenfort said, yes, that also played a role in that, which tells me, without straight up telling me, that it doesn't seem like the Cardinals are going to bring back Ledbetter.
As a restricted free agent, he needed to be tendered a contract. He was not. So now he's an unrestricted free agent. He's available on the open market. But again, it's when do injuries happen and if they're late in the season, and that factors into when you might be available the following season. So it's the business of the sport. It's the ugly side of it when you like a player because how good of a person they are, and you have to make those difficult, or on the word of Monty, a brutal decision as far as letting go Hump. And saying right now is not the right time for Jonathan Ledbetter.
Yeah, but look, these are decisions that have to be made. You have to be able to put the personal side to the side, the personal side of things, and that's what this front office is doing. And I think if you're a Cardinals fan and you see that objectivity and kind of having the clear eyes and the vision, then that's what you would want out of a general manager.
Anything else stand out from the more than, 25-minute press conference on Wednesday from Monty and JG, outside of how the press conference began with a shout-out to you, Danny, from the head coach?
Belated birthday message. Yes. That was very kind of him. I don't think anything else stands out. I mean, it's on our YouTube channel if you want to go check it out.
25-plus minutes. Let's see. I'm going to try looking at my log here. Almost 27. 27 minutes.
Kind of flew by.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot. Lots happened in the last week and a half.
That's true.
With still several weeks to go before maybe as many 11 new players are added once the draft hits.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, go check it out. Go listen to head coach and GM talk at the podium.
Good to hear from the decision makers on Wednesday, and always good to hear from our decision maker here on Cardinals Cover 2, Danny Sarek.
Whoa, clip that, Cody. Have that live in infamy.
No, that would be good news,
good
not
thing.
Infamy. Yeah.
Okay, it was a little sarcastic, but that's fine.
Sarcasm for me?
Who are you doing? Who are you picking for?
I haven't even looked.
You don't even know what I'm going to ask you.
Go ahead and ask.
From your March Madness bracket.
I haven't even looked.
Syracuse isn't playing. Missouri is not playing. U of A isn't. Oh, no, Arizona is.
Arizona
but ASU is not.
Yeah. We're going to have to do a department-wide
no money,
contest.
Let's make that clear.
Bragging rights.
Yes, bragging rights.
Who knows
rights
college basketball?
Only.
Who doesn't?
We cannot bet.
No.
I don't know. Here's the thing is, I don't know anything about college basketball. And then I get so intense about my bracket, and I get upset when I'm wrong, as if I have any true knowledge whatsoever. And so then I get frustrated with myself because I care, but I don't care enough about college basketball.
You start yelling at these young kids for not doing...
No, I'm not that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that kind of one.
Not that?
No.
Okay.
But Final Four is in Phoenix. That'll be fun.
Yes. First weekend of April?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Should be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe we should all go.
If you're buying my ticket, I'll be there.
Wow. I don't know if that's happening.
I might ruin my schedule.
Okay. Yes, I got some work to do. On that note, we'll put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Before Danny costs me any more money here on this Wednesday, special thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Jim Almahundro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Danny Sarek, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.